long as I've known her. She's been sober since the 7th of April of 1980. So, yeah, so she's got some great experience, right?
Last century.
I know.
So, with great pleasure, I introduce my friend Cheryl.
Thank you, Bill. Gosh, my name is Cheryl. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Cheryl.
And thank you, Bill, for asking me. It's always it's an honor to be able to share in an AA meeting. I did not want to admit I was an alcoholic. I'll give you a little preview of my before AA life, which I was raised in Springville, and I currently live in Springville, but there was a period of time when I was exploring the world, actually, Porterville, Australia. I did live back east at one time, but not for very long. And my thinking from as early as I can remember, I didn't think like other people. It was always, I don't know, I'm going to call it twisted thinking. My parents were very frustrated with me, the way that I thought about things. And when I became a teenager, I decided that my parents, the way they lived life was boring. And I remember telling my mother that when I grow up, I'm not going to live like you and Dad. Her and Dad were married for 52 years. And I just had a backwards way of looking at life. I was going to live life my way. I was going to do, I wasn't going to follow rules. I wasn't, you know, there were certain things, laws and stuff I would follow, but for the most part, I just wanted to live life on my own terms, and I did, and it landed me a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I was a teenager, my dad was a Tulare County Sheriff's deputy. He retired as a captain, and I didn't know he was a undercover narcotics officer, and I would go to stinky old bars out in the middle of nowhere to get, you know, beer. And they used to sell it to underage minors and probably still do here and there. And I walked into this bar one night. Me and my friends were going to party on a weekend. And I'm in this dark, stinky old bar. And the bartender says, just wait a minute, Cheryl. Give me a few minutes. I'm busy here. Okay. So I'm standing down at the end of the bar. And it was really dark in there, and my eyes are starting to adjust to the light, and I'm seeing this old boy sitting on the bar, which in my head, this is an old drunk sitting there, you know, and he had his head down on his arm, but there was something strangely familiar about that guy, you know, and as I'm getting used to the light, and I'm looking at these old khaki pants that he was wearing that had holes in them, and his boots that he had on, and this old shirt that was kind of ripped and torn, I'm thinking, that looks just like the clothes my dad wears when he mows the yard, you know? But the difference, this old boy had on bushy hair, and my dad was bald, but he had on the same hat that he used to mow the yard in. And I'm thinking, you know, it's kind of like a real surreal experience. Like, I think I know this guy, but I hope God it's not who he is, you know? And so I'm taking all this in, and all of a sudden, as he's got his head down on his arm, this voice comes out that I recognize loud and clear. You better get your butt home now, you know? And so I had a car, and I jumped in my car and took my friends home, and I went home. And I was scared to death, you know. My dad never beat me, but I was afraid of my dad. And, you know, he never said a of it. So I never went back to that bar. As a matter of fact, I never went into the bars after that. Just to find a home bar or something, you know, to buy the booze. But boy, that was an experience. I'll never, ever forget that. And, you know, I believe that I was an alcoholic from the get-go, based on my crazy thinking and based on the fact that I was a rebellious kid. I was a defiant kid, you know. You tell me to turn right, I'm turning left, and you can't do anything about it. That's how I lived life. I argued about everything. But yet, you know, what I've learned is, as rebellious and defiant as I was, there was a lot of fear. I was an angry person. I consider myself, I used to be a rageaholic. And I learned that that was fear. And if you'd have told me that I was a fearful person, I'd have gotten into a fight with you. I was a fighter. I loved the brawls. And if I knew there was going to be a rumble somewhere, I was going to get there and be right in the middle of it. You know, I loved that adrenaline rush, and I wasn't afraid of that. So, you know, blackouts, I lost some good friends because of my drinking, because I literally destroyed parts of their house and wasn't welcome back. I should have been arrested, should have been in jail, perhaps even prison time, but back last century, you know, if you were caught driving drunk or doing things outrageous, they would just tell you to go home. And when they'd look at my driver's license and they knew who my dad was, and they'd say, you know, you need to go home. Your dad wouldn't appreciate you out acting like this or doing this. And, you know, the paranoia, the fear. I would do some really outrageous things with weapons and in blackouts. And I just kind of lay low for a couple of weeks trying to, you know, when I got sober, I was scared to death. I was scared to death. My dad used to say, you weren't raised like that. And I just really, I believed I was a bad person. I believed I was a loser. I believed that's the way I was born. I believed that at that time. And so a lot of marriages, a lot of divorces, a lot of relationships. And I was living with one of my husbands, and he was working hard all the time, and he didn't want to go out and party and stuff. So he'd say, go to the bar, Cheryl, go have a good time, have a couple of drinks. Well, I never just had a couple of drinks. You know, I always intended to when I started out, but I get in a blackout, or somebody'd say, you know, there's a big party going on over in Tulare or way out in Seville or something like that. And I jumped in the car and away we went. So I had found this boyfriend, and he was sentenced to AA, and this was way back in the 70s. I was 26 years old when I went to my first AA meeting, and I just thought it was great what people were doing, because I knew drunks, you know, I knew alcoholics, and I just thought that was a great place for people to go to quit drinking. And I would not admit that at that time. No, there was no way I would admit. My boyfriend would get his card signed. We'd leave the meeting and go to the liquor store or go wherever and have a good time. And I did that until I was 35 years old. I'd go to AA meetings. I wouldn't admit I was an alcoholic, but I went to AA meetings, you know. And I just thought it was great. There was something like a magnetic attraction. There was no way I was going to admit I was an alcoholic. And I believe that the reason is that I was afraid, fearful, that what would I become if I got sober? I just really thought that there would be no life. I was used to the life of chaos and drama. I was used to the life of dysfunction. And if I wasn't drinking, what would life be like? I couldn't imagine it. So I wasn't going to admit I was an alcoholic. And what I've learned since I've been sober is that this is a progressive disease, that it gets worse, never better. And I can see the progression of my life. I lost marriages. I lost homes, cars. I was being evicted out of my house when I finally admitted that was my bottom. My car blown up. I was being evicted out of my house. I was not a responsible mother. I had three boys. The youngest was four. And I'd always nickeled and dimed my dad for money to drink on. I worked three jobs. I was a hard worker, but I was not responsible. I didn't pay bills. I didn't pay my registration on my car. I'm the person that used to go peel off the sticker off of somebody's car and stick it on mine, you know? I wasn't responsible. I didn't follow that kind of stuff. And I just reached the point of, I couldn't go on anymore. And I thought about suicide a couple of times, but I was too chicken. And I just wanted the merry-go-round to stop. I wanted to get off. And I was scared to death that Tuesday night in 1980 when I went to that AA meeting at the Porterville Halfway House. It's now called PAR. And I sat there and I was shaking like a leaf. And one of the old boys in that meeting said, "You better bring her a half a cup of coffee because she's shaking so bad. I don't think she'll be able to handle a full cup of coffee." You know, and I'm thinking, coffee? I don't drink coffee. Well, they brought me a half a cup of coffee, and I was so used to hand-to-mouth stuff, I drank that coffee, and I was shaking like a leaf. And I said, "My name is Cheryl, and I'm an alcoholic." And, God, I was scared, scared, scared. I didn't know where life was going to take me. I didn't know what I was going to do. I remember saying, you know, and they knew me in AA, you know, because I'd attended meetings for 8 or 9 years. They knew who I was. And I started crying, and I said I was losing my house, and I didn't know where I was going to go with my three kids. And my dad, he refused to give me any more money. He said, "Cheryl, I can't give you any more money. You're not responsible. You don't take the money and pay your bills. You don't take the money and pay your rent." And he said, "I'm sorry. I don't know what you and those kids are going to do or where you're going to live, but I am not giving you one more dime." And I just really felt like life was over. So, you know, enter Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I sat there and cried and told my story, there was an old boy AA member that came up after the meeting, and he said, "I have a house that you and your kids can live in. It's an old, old house. It's nothing fancy." He said, "I've still got the utilities on, and it has no furniture." He said, "I'll let you live there for a month rent-free, and after that you have to pay me rent." And I was grateful that somebody would do that. And I think I only had beds for the boys. Like, you know, being an alcoholic, if I needed money, I sold stuff, you know. Sold all my furniture and sold stuff I had. But I didn't sell the boys' beds, as bad as they were. So we moved into this old drafty house. My two older sons were teenagers, and they were really ashamed of me. "Mom, what have you done?" And the four-year-old, he was too young to really know what was going on. And believe it or not, I had a job, but I never paid my bills with my money. And so I would ask for rides to work. And I would go to AA meetings, and what I got for trying to get to a meeting, boy, that was tough. Let me tell you, there was two meetings in Springville. The breakfast speaker meeting was once a month, and then there was a third level meeting. In Porterville, there was a Monday night newcomers meeting, the Wednesday night men's stag, women weren't allowed in that meeting, and then there was a meeting in Lindsay on Wednesday night. There was a meeting in Visalia Friday night at Charlie's Shoe Shop downtown. And boy, it was tough to get to meetings. I'll tell you, I had to really, I felt like I was humiliating myself by asking for a ride to meetings. And they said, you have to ask. You have to ask for a ride. And so somebody after the meeting would say, you know, we're going up to Three Rivers Monday night. Who wants to go? And so I'd raise my hand. We're going to Lindsay Wednesday night. Who wants to go? And I'd raise my hand. And I was going to meetings with all these strange people who were sober alcoholics. And I remember this one guy had a great big tuna boat car. I don't know what the heck it was, but man, there was a bunch of us jammed in that car. And I'm thinking, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? And all they're talking about is steps and meetings and talking to their sponsors and reading the big book. And I'm thinking, oh good God, what has happened to my life, you know? And I had a lot of tearful moments. Now, one thing, did get a sponsor, not because I wanted to, but I didn't want you guys in AA to think I was a bad person by not getting a sponsor. So me and this gal kind of hooked up, and she had a sense of humor. She said, I'll be happy to be your sponsor. We're going to work the steps. And I'm thinking, oh, no. Because part of my rebelliousness and defiance was, I'm not working the steps, I'm not getting a sponsor, I'm not reading a big book, I'll go to meetings. And so, you know, there was that first God having a sense of humor. I had a sponsor, and we were going to start working the steps. She said, you got to get a big book. And I'm thinking, I can't get a big book. Those things cost $50. You know, I barely have enough money. I was throwing nickels and dimes in the basket as it went around. So I got my paycheck from a job. And, oh, did I mention I was also drawing welfare? And so I bought this big book for $3.65. And I was shocked that it wasn't a $60 book because the darn thing was so big. And my sponsor told me to read the doctor's opinion and the first 164 pages. I could barely read. I barely graduated high school. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know. So, oh, gosh. I would, after I got off work, they had, at the Porterville Halfway House, they had a detox center down there at that time. And there were two gals working there, Rose and Darlene. And I was a bar drinker. I didn't know how to stay out of the bars. So I would go down to the halfway house, and I would talk to Rose and Darlene. And I picked up my four-year-old from daycare, and I'd sit there, and I'd just shake. I didn't know what to do. And Rose and Darlene would say, you go home, you're going to feed your kids dinner. You're going to take a shower and you're going to go to a meeting. Somebody will pick you up for the meeting. And I thought, okay, I literally had to have them tell me what to do. And they said, don't drink. Between here and your house, you don't drink. So, okay. And then it was suggested by my sponsor that I carry my big book around with me to remind myself, oh, yeah, I'm an AA member because I got a great forgetter. You know, I'm okay in an AA meeting with other alcoholics and you know, listening to them chatter about whatever alcoholics chatter about. But when I walk out that door, the real world is out there. And I'm used to going out there and getting involved with that. You know, now you want to go to a party? Oh, yeah, let's go to a party. Oh, so-and-so or whatever. So I had to carry my big book with me to remind me I'm going to AA, and I don't drink. I remember crying in a meeting one night, blubbering because I was an alcoholic, and blubbering because I said, I can't drink anymore. One of these old seasoned AA farts said, oh, yeah, you can drink. Sure you can. And I sat there for a minute, and I said, I don't want to drink. And I really think that that was a breakthrough for me. Instead of saying, I can't drink, I don't want to drink. And I've learned a lot of things like that in the fellowship. And so you know, oh my gosh, those old farts were so mean to me. And here I am, an old fart. And I'm not mean to people, let me tell you that. I've learned to be kind. And they told me I couldn't get into a relationship. Actually, the truth of what they said was, you can't have sex for the first year. Boy, I got mad. And I'm thinking, who are those old farts to tell me what I can and can't do? So, you know, there was this guy in AA that had 5 years of sobriety, and I thought he was kind of good looking. And you know, there's a saying in AA, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any lengths to get it, well, he had what I wanted, a car, a house, a checking account, money in the bank. So we got married when I was 8 months sober. Now, I'm not going to recommend anybody do that because we split up a week later. And, oh, my gosh. And then so we decided that we were going to really try this thing, and we went into counseling, and wow, what a merry-go-round. So, you know, being sober, I started working the steps. And then they told me they needed a general service representative. And I think I was 6 months sober. And you're supposed to have 2 years. And, you know, I was 35 years old when I got sober. And I had the emotional thinking of a 13-year-old. I didn't know it at that time. I thought I was hip, slick, and cool. And I thought I knew everything. And I thought I knew how life worked. And I really did not. And, but they really needed this GSR, and that's how I got involved in district service. And that scared me, because I figured everybody in AA was a lot smarter than I was. And I would hear them talking about traditions, and I didn't know what the heck that was, and didn't want to know, but I thought, well, if this is what it takes to stay sober, I'll do it. My idea with working the steps, and I used to put this out in meetings. I was really stupid. I didn't keep my mouth shut. You know, I'd say, well, you know, these steps may work for you guys, but I'm going to work steps 1, 2, and 3, and I'm going to jump over and work step 12 and carry the message. And they told me, Cheryl, you don't have a message. All you got is a mess. You know, and I was insulted. And then, you know, I'd be crying in a meeting about some silly thing, and they'd tell me to go to Whiners Anonymous. That's for those that want to stay in the problem. And somebody brought a great big doggy pacifier to the meeting one night, and I really thought they were mean to me. But, you know, I needed that. I needed their tough love and their honesty. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. I'll tell you about my first experience. Let's put it this way. I was not a good person with money. If I had money, money was to be spent. And so they elected me secretary of a meeting, and I had about 3 months sober, and I was also the treasurer. Well, I decided that meeting needed to have donuts, and I needed to buy stuff for this meeting. And then I decided that I didn't have enough money to, I don't know, buy McDonald's or something, and I spent some of this group money at McDonald's. But you see, I've got a big mouth. I'm telling everybody what I'm doing. And I told my sponsor, she says, well, how much does the group have? And I said, well, I owe the group about $8.47 because I spent some money at McDonald's, and oh my God, phew, geez, she absolutely, I couldn't understand what the problem was. You know? She said, that's not your money. That's the group's money. That's stealing from AA. I'm thinking, what? You know, she said, you don't do that, Cheryl. That's not your money. And when she said it, it really got my attention. And she said, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't get money from anybody but members. And we have to pay our rent on the meeting. And sometimes we have to pay the utilities. So how do you think we're going to buy a big book to give it away to somebody? And I was a little bit ashamed about my attitude. And I'll tell you another money story. Let me tell you today, you can trust me with money today. It's been a process. So my husband and I decided that we were going to go to Lake Tahoe. And we had a new truck, and he had bought me a new fur coat. And it was snowing like crazy, and he had given me money to pay all the bills. He was trying to teach me to be responsible with money. And he gave me all this money to pay the bills before we went to Tahoe. And, well, you know, what does an old alcoholic think? You know, my old thinking hadn't quite changed yet, and I'm thinking, I'm not going to pay the bills. I'm going to take this money with us. That'll be all the more money we can gamble on it, have a good time on it. So, you know, we're heading up 99, going up to Tahoe, and he says, now, isn't it a good feeling, Cheryl, to know that the bills are paid and we're still able to go to Lake Tahoe? And me and my big mouth, I said, I didn't pay the bills. Held up my purse. I said, I got all that money in my purse. Oh, my God. He pulled over off 99, and he must have laid about 20 feet of rubber, I'll tell you. And he's yelling at me about how irresponsible I am, and I'm taking the money away from the landlord, the utility company, and everybody else I was supposed to pay. And he said, my God, are you ever going to learn to pay a bill and be responsible? And, of course, I felt bad, but I still had a hard time understanding what the problem was. But I have learned. I learned how to balance a checkbook, and I learned that when you have an ATM card, you got to put money in the other side, you know. I learned to stop writing hot checks because when I got sober, I had a lot of hot checks. My amends, when I got up to the ninth step, was a lot of financial amends. And I made good on everybody that I swindled money from, all the employers I stole from, all the hot checks that I wrote. And I really had to do some tracking people down to try to find them. But I made, especially my dad, I made financial amends to my dad. And he didn't want to take it. But I told him, I said, Dad, I have to do this to stay sober. Now, the interesting thing with my dad was, even though he was very disappointed in me as a daughter, when I told him I was going to AA, he told me to get out of his house. He said, no daughter of mine is going to be an alcoholic. He said, you are disowned. I want you out of here. I don't ever want you to call me or come back to see me. And I left, and I was crying like crazy. And I had a borrowed car, and I drove to a Tulare meeting. I think it was on Sunday night, a candlelight meeting, and they were having a big birthday celebration. And I had cried so hard, I didn't want to drink. And that was my higher power, to drive from Springville to Tulare without stopping and picking up a drink, because that was traumatic for me, that my dad just did not want me in AA. And my sponsor told me, you know, your dad, he's a proud man. And she said, it's not for you to take personal, Cheryl. She said, that's just how he feels. And she said, what you do is you call your dad up once a week, you tell him you love him, and you hang up. You don't slam the phone down. If he asks you if you're still going to AA, you say yes. You need to learn to be honest about what you're doing with your life and how you're changing your life. So anyway, you know, I've been sober, and life has changed a lot, and I've learned a lot. I've learned about all that fear that I didn't want to face, and I've learned that in my fourth step, I had a sponsor that had me do steps 4, 5, 6, and 7 as a package. That I had to learn in step 4, my resentments were because of rules that I made. My rule was, I'm not going to follow rules. My rule was, you know, people have to behave a certain way for me to like them. And if you didn't behave the way I thought you should, you were out. That was my rule. And I'd get resentful at people because they wouldn't follow my rules. And I had to learn that that was my part in creating the resentment. I had all these rules that weren't working for me. And I didn't know the spiritual principles of being honest. You know, I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief. I knew how to lie real good. Lying kept me out of trouble. And I had to look at these rules, if it's bringing you peace or is it bringing you pain. My rules were bringing me a lot of pain, and my life was really screwed up. I learned by doing the steps, I'm not a failure. I'm not a loser. I wasn't born that way. My rule was that I created my self-will. I wanted to do things my way. I was selfish and self-centered. And so my rule was, I'm going to do it my way. Was it working for me? Nope. Landed me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful for all the sponsors and all the people that have taught me and pulled my covers when my covers needed pulling. I'm grateful for the fact that I've learned how to love. I did not know how to love people. I wanted you to love me, but I wasn't going to love you back. I've learned how to forgive, and I've learned, I forgave my first husband for something that I thought was so terrible that I would never, ever forgive him for. And what I learned about that was that when we don't forgive somebody, we're still living in the past. And in order to live today and to have a future of being happy, this meeting is called Serenity Seekers. How do we seek serenity? Well, we don't go to the connection. We don't go to the liquor store. We put the plug in the jug. We learn to turn our lives around by going to meetings, reading the book, getting a sponsor, and having an open mind, being willing. And sometimes we have to be willing to be willing. I didn't want them talking about God when I got sober. And today, the God of my understanding is my best friend. I wake up in the morning and I just say, well, okay, what have we got planned for today? And, you know, I make plans. I don't plan the outcome. If I'm going to work that day, I'll just talk to my higher power about, you know, help me to be kind to others today. And I've been kind to people so often that really it has come to be part of my nature. Because I was really an angry, ugly person. If I didn't like your shoes, or if I didn't like your hat, or if I didn't like your hair, man, it came right out of my mouth. If I thought it, I said it. I'm not that way anymore. I've learned that, you know, it's none of my business what people do today. It's a tall order, me taking care of my own business. I'm a happy alcoholic today. My marriage of 35 years, we're no longer married, but we're friends. And actually, we get along better now than we did when we were married. Imagine that. My three boys, the two older ones were never going to have anything to do with me when they left home. And that has all turned around. When my dad passed away, he had made me in charge of his will and taking care of his business. I was 5 years sober when he passed away. I got an education in Alcoholics Anonymous because I got sober enough and I got stable enough to be able to read and learn how to process. And I've had a great career. I'm still working. Because I'm a worker bee. I'm one of these people. I can't sit home in my own head for more than 2 days because, you know, sometimes my head still likes to take me to infinity and beyond, and I don't need to be there. I need to be right here into today. I need to be helping the alcoholic that needs help. I need to be helping Cheryl by doing that. So love and tolerance is my code, and it's in the big book. I'm grateful to be here, and I just encourage you all, no matter what, value yourself and keep coming back. Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you.
That is great. We are now going to start the discussion portion of the meeting. We would like to hear from as many different people as possible, so please just keep that in mind when you're sharing. And if you're here in person, the microphone is up here at the table, so please use your outdoor voice so the people online can hear you. And, Cheryl, here's a list of people that are here in person, and then we have the online people, and I'll help.
I love a hit list. Who'd like to be first? Go, Christian.
I really like your story. There's a lot of parts of that I can relate to. Not the violent, crazy parts. I would have been kind of peaceful. I mean, but yeah, I didn't think a lot like my family did, my parents did. I thought a lot of, as you said, like, the evil thoughts, whatever you said, really said the bad thoughts, you thought differently. My family always thought I was the weird one, the black sheep, crazy one. I was like you. I people would tell me to do stuff, and I didn't want to do what you wanted to do. I wanted to do what I wanted to do. Because I was told it was, you know, at a young age, like, I had to do this, I had to do that, stay in line, stay in line with that. I was just like, no, I don't want to do that. You know, people with my parents tell me this stuff, I ended up doing it, but I was the whole time ranting and raving. And then when I got older, and I was able, and I was on my own, I moved to job, went to job corps at the age of 16, and all that was there was RAs, residential advisors, and armed forms, and even the teachers that were there. Well, there would be times where other students or residents of job corps would sneak off campus and go get bottles. Well, I ended up, one guy ended up going and buying me a bottle of Canadian Mist, and he sat there and said, well, I guess somebody got my, I left my locker unlocked, so I got there and stacked my Canadian Mist, so I really get to feel what drunk is like. Well, I got my pass to go off campus, and a buddy of mine, this other guy we call Tweak, because he used to tweet, and he was kind of crazy, but our buddy Aussie picked us up, and we were off campus, and he bought us a bottle of Everclear. And that was my first drunken experience, and I'm going to tell you what, it was not pleasant. By the time we got back, we were drinking, and I found out, we bought a clear bottle of Dr. Pepper, and drank it down the label, and poured that whole little bottle of Everclear in there. And then my buddy Sweet, we drank that whole 2 liter bottle down. And then after we finished that, we ended up walking down to a 7-Eleven over there. And my buddy Ollie, he was 21, and he bought us a piece of Budweiser. Well, over there in Utah, the alcohol level content is a lot lower. Mm-hmm. Budweiser here is 5%, Budweiser over there is 3.7. So it's lower than a Bud Light. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be too much. Well, that is the Everclear. And then looking down the way, going, wow, those lights look really weird. Holy crap, they're called lights. And we end up walking away, and we set our beers down behind a dumpster. And then my buddy Oz goes, you gotta run. And we, okay, why? And we started running. And I don't know why I followed these guys. These idiots, they run behind this building, and they go this way, and they turn right. Right back in front of the 7-Eleven. And there's this cop, stops us, and he announces where we're from. And like with you, my big mouth, I was all, job corps. And I'm standing there with the cop, and as I'm standing there in front of the cop, I'm just like, swaying back and forth. And I found out I'm a student talker. And I just want to talk my way out of that. And he goes, well, you know, you job corps chance you give us, nothing but problems. And we just got one of your guys last week, and he was back to the cop car, and he was giving us that. And I was like, oh, I knew who that was. Yeah, oh, Anthony. Yeah, people love him. And I was like, don't worry. We're not here to cause any trouble. You know, we're right down the road from the hospitality center. I'm from California. I have no idea where I'm at here in this town. I don't want to get lost. I'm staying down the road. He goes, you guys get back down there. Don't cause any problems. I'm pretty sure he could smell the liquor on me. He could see me going back and forth. He just let us go. And we get back to the hospitality center. They stole that money. All that Everclear and Budweiser and Dr. Pepper in my stomach. I let it out 8 times in a row. And I was like, I'm never going to do this again. Here I am. But, yeah, it was crazy. Like, I just wanted to do things on my own when I got out on my own. And I'll touch on one last thing. Like you said, you know, your husband said you go out and drink. You're like, I intended to only have a little bit. And it turned into a lot. There's a saying that goes, I don't always drink a lot, but when I do, I turn into another person. So he drinks a lot. Right. And that's pretty much where we all at. Like, you know, I was always in the gym. I'm only have a few. Or I'm only have a couple. And a couple turn into five. And five turn into 12. And then I'm blackout, and I'm waking up the next day, and people go, you know what you did last night? Mm-hmm. Oh, God, don't tell me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of what happened there. So whenever I was hearing your story, I was like, man, I remember those days. So, that's why I like coming to these meetings. When you hear every other story, you start to hear other parts. Like they say, you're going to hear these parts that if you just listen, you're going to hear other parts that you connect to, and other parts that you learn more from. So, kind of nice. I like it. So that, like we say, fine. I'll take another 20.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Max?
Yeah, my name's Max. I'm
Max. Hi, Max.
I don't know. I'm coming up on 2.5 years sober. And, yeah, I wish I could say that, you know, like, once I got sober, like, everything, I got perfect.
Yeah.
You know, that I was, like, you know, this whole new person. You know, I acted right. And, no, that's just not the case. I really didn't understand it. You know, like, the first, like, 7 months of my sobriety, you know, there was, like, a lot of, like, really bad behavior. Still got myself in a lot of trouble, sober, a lot of, like, you know, alcoholic behavior, turned towards, like, other people. And, you know, even though I've been, you know, trying to get sober since I was, like, 19, you know, I thought that once I took the drugs and alcohol away, you know, everything would be fine. And, you know, it's like in like the last 2 years, it's really kind of opened my eyes that, you know, even though I'm sober, you know, I'm still an alcoholic. And that doesn't just mean that I, you know, drink. It means that, you know, I act impulsively, you know, I treat people poorly, you know, selfish, self-centered, resentful, angry. I can get violent. Just like the list goes on and on. And in the last six months or so, I was living up in Three Rivers, and you know, I can make a whole list of excuses, whether it's my job or my class meetings up there, the Monday night is still going on. Whatever it was, you know, if I wasn't able to go to meetings, whatever. And sort of lo and behold, like that bad behavior started coming back out. You know, I was getting short with people, treating people poorly, acting impulsively. And I don't like anything like that. Makes me feel bad. I'm sure it doesn't make anybody else feel good around me. And I moved down here to Visalia a few days ago. And go to meetings every single day. Trying to get linked up with some service physicians. I don't know, today I feel pretty good though. You know? So, those two have to add up then, right? Anyway, that's all I got.
Thanks, Max.
Mindy, you want to share? I do. My name is Mindy. I am a grateful alcoholic.
Hi, Mindy.
And, you know, there's a lot of things you touched on that Dennis. You know, talk about the old parts in the program. Well, I tell you what, yeah, I got my feelings hurt a lot. And, but I tell you what, if it wasn't for some of the old timers getting in my face and telling me what's what and who's who, I don't know that I'd be sitting here, where I am today. And I'm grateful to be sitting here because there was a time, you know, when I first came into program that, yeah, you guys are a bunch of nerds. That nobody had anything better to do than to, like, you had no life, so you just, this is what you did. You didn't come around and talk to each other. It's okay. I'm here because the man as they say, the black press told me I need to be here for a couple of meetings. And no thanks. And I really thought people were just weird. And I had no intention of admitting I was an alcoholic, didn't want to, and I wasn't one. I, you know, just got into a little bit of trouble and going through a rough spot. And, you know, we were talking on the way over here, and I was telling one of the girls from Parlor that I was talking to that, you know, wherever you go, there, wherever you run to, wherever you go, there you are. And, you know, growing up, nothing was ever good enough. Man, you know, anything I did, it was extreme. And nothing was ever good enough. Relationships, I never felt good enough. My self-esteem, so yeah, it was, when I got sober, or when I, many, one of my, you know, many attempts, I couldn't figure out my life still sucked. I mean, I quit drinking, so what else could, you know, and I remember Jim B., another great old-timer, he told me one time, he said, you know, Mindy, you quit drinking, life is better, right? It doesn't welcome to AA. And it took a minute, but then it was like, okay, maybe I am the problem, but I still wasn't very willing. I wasn't going to be willing. And it took a lot of years. I've been in program since 2012. In February, I'll have 5 years, but it took that long to get serious about it and to admit there was, maybe it was me. And I think I got scared. I was losing my spirituality. I was just losing everything. Lost my family, lost my retirement, my great job with the school district. I mean, I had lost everything. And I think it was the last thing to go with that spiritual. I was losing me. I was scared. I think by then I was scared. So I decided to get serious about this. And I am so grateful that for the people that hung on to me and they could see, because what I needed was for somebody to see something in me even when I couldn't see it. And then to be willing and then to start believing, even when I did believe, okay, I'll look at you guys, I'll hold on to something. And it's kind of cool now because I've always taught preschool. And so now I look at these kids and I go, trust me, I'm here. You hold on to me, I'll hold on to you, we do this together. Did I work? Program with kids and they don't even know it. We do. It's okay to feel what you feel. We're going to walk through, but we're not going to stay there. We're going to keep moving and all kinds of stuff. I go, man, I just did program with 3-4 year olds that night. And I do it with the workers and they don't even know it sometimes. And then sometimes I'll do it and I'll think, Mindy, why don't you take the advice you give it, but you don't always use it, so come on. No. But I tell you what, just to kind of wrap it up, I believe we are all flipping miracles. You know, I couldn't put any kind of time together. And when I did, it was because I passed out. It wasn't because, you know, I put any effort into it or any. When I got serious about it, I went from losing everything I ever had. Like I said, I had a great job with the school district, top preschool, lost it. You know, escorted off the school grounds by a police officer, and I felt like my whole life had just been. And now going from that to, you know, being a director of a preschool now, and I only say that not because it's not anything I did, it's this program. It's a 12-step program that I became willing and, you know, sponsor people that believed in me even when I couldn't see it, but I'm buying my own car on my own. I didn't have to, you know, beg or borrow or, you know, sleep with somebody or pretend to be happy in a relationship just to get something from somebody. I've been in my apartment for 3 years now, just doing some things, walking through some stuff, walking through relationships that I've ended, learning how to love myself so I can be there for somebody. I mean, be the kind of person to love myself so that how can I love somebody else when I can't love myself? So learning these things, being able to believe in a power greater than myself, which, yeah, there was a time when I thought I was the, you know, the greatest thing, and I knew all the answers, and nobody was going to tell me anything like you talked about. You told me to go left, I was going to go right, and maybe I don't think that's a good idea to get in a relationship with that guy. I'll make it work. I'll show you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, defiant, stubborn, and those defaults, those things are still there. It's just learning not to act on them and learning new ways. Because I want to live. I want to. Yeah, I can drink. Like, that was perfect. I can drink. I don't want to anymore. And it's not enough just not to drink. I want to do better things now. I want, it's just leveling up and believing in myself and believing there's a better way. And I'm just grateful for you nerdy bunch of people. I get to call my family and I get to be of service and, what was done for me, I get to do for somebody else, and it matters now. It matters the way I conduct myself, and so I'm just grateful to be here, and thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Angie.
Thank you.
Would anybody online care to share?
If you want to, you can raise your hand or just unmute yourself.
I was trying it, kept doing something to me. Hi, I'm Stacy, alcoholic. So grateful to be here. Wow. I could. Wait, can you guys hear me pretty good?
Yes.
I feel like I'm yelling.
Yes.
Okay, it's these new AirPods. Okay. And I feel like I'm yelling. I have these tiny ears, so I have to make sure they fit correctly. Yes. Oh, you know. One of the things I learned was accepting that I'm an alcoholic and all my faults and flaws and, you know, the criticizing what someone's wearing or how they're dressing or how they're looking or, you know, I was turning to the point where I didn't realize that I was the one that was being so stubborn that maybe I needed to be lassoed and branded and tagged, you know. I was seriously... Screw you guys. I don't have a problem. What I'm doing is fine, and I can control myself and everybody else. And it was becoming like a chaotic kitchen, you know. I wasn't a closet drinker. I was a pantry drinker. And I figured if I was handling everything and still taking care of everybody, that I was all right, you know. And I was still going to handle it all together, and you weren't going to tell me what I was doing wrong. And then the realization when a few years ago that I finally pulled, you know, excuse me, I'm saying this, but I pulled my head out of my ass, you know. I had my feet in the clouds or my head in the clouds and my feet were firmly planted on the ground. But my emotional part was the guilt and feeling down on myself and what a piece of shit I was, like, what kind of mom, you know, allows these things or, you know, is drinking a whole bottle of wine after my kid goes to bed because I'm trying to kill that anxiety and nightmares and everything. And that's not okay because that's not holding it together. That's not taking care of myself. And I was, in a sense, thought I was putting everybody else first, and I wasn't. I was being selfish. I was putting myself first in the worst way possible, because I wanted to control, obviously I wasn't controlling it right, but my point is, was I wanted to control my drinking, and I wasn't. It was like, you know, when you drive a car and your power steering is not right, and you can't straighten your vehicle out, that's what trying to control your drinking is. It's never going to happen without going to the mechanic and having it done properly. And that's what I feel these meetings are doing is, and welcome newcomers too. It's so awesome to see so many people here tonight too that are new or have been here so long, because I love hearing your stories. Whether you're sober 24 hours or 60 years, I'm going to take that to heart. That means so much to me because I know that I can keep doing it too. And I know that I'm not a failure. I know that I'm sorry, I woke up today and I was like totally crying for everybody else because I felt like such a failure today because every single one of my friends was and family members was just ignoring everything I needed. And I had to stop myself and stop feeling sorry for myself and control my abandonment issues and make a cup of coffee and eat dinner and come to a meeting so that I know I'm not worthless, you know. And then my friend did text me, my childhood friend. I reconnected. I've known her since I was 10. And it was to say that she was sorry, not getting back to me. She's super, super busy and just had her fourth grandbaby. And she had married really young at 19, long story short. But I was starting to do that where I was starting to feel sorry for myself. And even though I knew I wasn't going to drink, it was still that way of thinking and being pathetic. Where I know it sounds bad, but, and I'm not going to put down anybody that feels that way too, but it's not what I want. You know, I know that I'm stronger than that, but I know it's okay to cry about it. And I know that it's okay to acknowledge it and be like, you know what? I'm not pathetic. This is how I feel. I'm upset right now. I'm a human being. Maybe I'm a little not the best person when I wake up in the afternoon. I'm different in the morning. In the morning, I'm a little more beep, 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 like my three crazy dogs and our crazy cat. In the afternoon, I'm kind of like, I swear if you bang on that door and wake me up in a rude way, I'm going to come out like, you know, it's a crazy rooster or something, you know. But instead it was, I have to take care of me. And part of taking care of me is coming to these meetings and not being so afraid of what I have to say anymore. Because I do get a little nervous and a little, and it's, we're going to also be in the Christmas parade. So that's, I have acute anxiety and chronic stress disorder, and with all these crazy shootings and stuff going on, and my mom was murdered 3 days before Christmas. She was shot by her ex-husband there during car game. So that starts to, even though it's been 20-something years, it's, and he's up for parole next October with Christmas parade and all these people acting nuts. And I have to really calm it down and not be afraid to live. If something's going to happen, it's going to happen. I know I'm not going to be drinking, so I won't be an ass while I'm singing up there with the float and whatnot. But that's also a release, is I know that I can, if I don't have time to sing, I can come to me. And I don't have to upset anyone else in that sense. Or apologize for just being here, being alive. And thank you for letting me talk. I appreciate you all. And Cheryl, your story touches everywhere. All your stories touch everywhere. Thank you so much. Stay safe and have a blessed night.
Right on. Stay safe.
Thank you for your honesty.
Who's next?
My name is Tracy Bell. I'm a host.
Hey, Tracy.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Tracy.
Wow. Your story, I've talked to you a little bit and heard parts of your story, but there were so many different things that I missed. Except as a kid, I was the one who was trying to be good. I wasn't the rebellious one. I had a brother doing that. So I was the one who was trying to make everything okay and fit in and you know, be the good, I was the good kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was smoking and drinking at 10, but I was the good kid. and also, I came into AA my first time when I was 24. And I came in and I hung around and at 98, I met my future husband. And I do not recommend that. Yeah, don't do that. Give yourself a chance. Anyway, that's just a personal thing for me. So I came in at 24, and because I, like I said, I had started drinking very young, when I was about 5 or 10. And I remember my first, it was Old English 800. I don't even know if they still have it anymore, but that's what I touched on the first time. I got drunk, I got the I thought that's how drinking was. I thought that's how it was, because I thought it always was for me, from the very first time I got drunk. I started, you know, taking sips when I was very young. But anyway, you got so many different things that he talks about, and that and I hung around. I did stay. I was sober for 12 years, and then I had a back injury, and I got on opiates. I didn't drink from 12 to 15 years, but I've, in coming back around this time, I have talked to that husband, who were still very young. I'm making my rent and forcing the rent. I'm driving around with my divorce papers in my vehicle. I'm still like dragging my feet. I don't know why. And I, you know, but I have a sponsor. I can talk to her about it and figure this crap out. But I got opiates and. When I started drinking again at 15 years, and I drank for 15 years. I drank every day for 15 years. And so what you were talking about, when you came in, I could barely read anymore. I didn't know how to grocery shop. I didn't have a vehicle. I had to beg. I didn't beg, but I had to ask for a ride. So I, you know, and for almost two and a half years. In fact, today's 7th. I have 31 months to live.
Yay!
I want that to change. So when I came back in. And there we were. Oh boy, I'm so incredibly grateful that I'm sitting here and sober. I have a vehicle, which is like huge. If you guys have seen me at all the last 2.5 years, you know that me having a car is something. It's a big shit right there. Because yeah, I was that person who was texting somebody, 5 to 8 people every day for a ride. And I had something had to change because I couldn't do it anymore. And staying and that people pleasing thing that stayed with me throughout my life. I find now, and I also find that I'm getting over it. I'm getting over it, which is for me, I think it's a healthy thing. They talk about this being a selfless program, and in many ways, I see that. It is also a selfish program now, in that if I don't get better, I can't help anyone. That's enough. So that's why I'm here. I'm here because this program, I know this program works. I knew when I walked back in that this program works. I knew that. It worked for me for a really long time, originally. And it's working for me now. And if you get back the effort that's put in. And when I came back in, I was at a meeting 2 or 3, sometimes 4 times a day until we went into lockdown. And then I was on Zoom once or twice, more than that. And then meetings opened up about a month after. So I've been able to go to meetings this whole time. And I don't know exactly what I'm trying to get to, but I've been feeling kind of isolated now that things are opening up, it's interesting because I'm feeling more isolated now that I have, well, because I have a vehicle. I have a vehicle, I don't have to rely on other people to get me where I need to be. And so now I'm back self-reliant and relying on our power guy, which I don't always do so great, so well. And here I sit tonight, so. So there we go.
And you, Tracy. Everyone likes to have
two shoes. Yeah,
it's you. Dave. Big alcoholic. What's going on? Listen to that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
About the young man sitting next to Christian.
Me?
Yes.
Jeremy, alcoholic.
Jeremy.
Yeah, right now I'm going through my fourth time in recovery, fine. And I just had like 2 years, 6 months. And yeah, I'm having a, like they say, one drink and gone. No joke. Yeah, I did that. That was no fun. I went on like a little 6 month kind of thing and then finally was just chasing myself because I had my own business and trying to do all that and just, you know, chasing your tail going around. So I came back and this is how alcohol is. And I did 30 days, basically went back out and probably lasted like, I started a new job, got an apartment, a room, rent, a couple guys that are sober. Alcoholic too, and I actually like went golfing with the guys that run Pine on Saturday and drank the Saturday night and went on like a 4-day little thing where I was, I'm like living in a house with two sober alcoholics and I'm in the room faking that I have COVID so I can just drink it like, you know, once you after like 48 hours, like I'm done. I gotta tell somebody. But then you start looking back and you're like, that's so pathetic. Like when you drink, cause like right now when I drink, I don't have cravings. I don't really have any reservations, I guess. I probably bad view, but it just happens. And it's weird. It's almost like now I drink whenever things are going really good. And yeah, it's just weird. And I look back and I'm like, this is just sad. You don't have any fun. Just do it. As soon as I take my first drink, I'm done. Like, and then it's almost at the point where I have to go to recovery and actually do it because I can't do it for myself. I'm a month and a half in. And then this time I actually got a sponsor doing my steps and stuff. And it's actually pretty good. Because I got 2.5 years without it. I think like Dave, like the little Dave Scout Swiss, they tell you to do all these things in recovery, and then you do, and then you kind of like take a little shortcut, or you bob and weave on a couple, and you think it's going to be good. So and then, you know, buy you a year, buy you 2 months or whatever, but you'll be back. So this time I'm just going to do the whole thing, like do exactly what they tell me, get sponsored, and then definitely get my surroundings. Because that's how, like, whenever I had my 2.5 years, I was, like, had all my buddies and stuff, and what happened is I moved to Texas to go start flipping houses with a cousin, and I kind of knew, like, before I was going, I was like, I need, as soon as I get there, my meetings and stuff like that, and I had a kind of feeling, like, you kind of know, and when I got up there, I started working and stuff, and didn't do it, and now I got telling them, like I was a bird, and they let me out of the cage, my surrounding, like, support group. And I flew a little too far. And it was like, it was done, dude. And then once I took that first drink, gone. Like, it was this same old story where you're just chasing your tail, trying to quit, you know, and it didn't work. And that's kind of where I went on that. But this time I'm just going to do everything. Just sponsor school, like him, and then going through the step. Kind of fast. I talked to somebody and he said, that's kind of cool. You can go through them and then you can do it again or whatever. Just to get a kind of a picture of it. Besides that, it's going pretty good. enjoying it. I like doing this stuff. That's like what one of the main things I want to do when I get out of fine is just be constantly involved. But that's what kept me sober last time. And then once I just got away from it, it just sucked me right back in. So I'm in it for life. Now I already know I gotta be involved the rest of my life and stuff, because the way I drink, it's just, it ain't gonna happen for now. So
insanity or death, that's the only two ways. That's the only road there is on there. Only goes two ways.
Yeah.
That road. Insanity or death. You know, you're here now. You've got this chance. You're kicking ass at it. Don't ruin it. You've got a good road right now that you're in. Four-wheel drive that sucker and have fun with it. But if you don't stay on the road you're going right now, the right one, you're going to go on the road wrong one. And that's insanity or death.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, we're just about out of time, but I want to be sure to thank Miss Cheryl for coming out tonight. I'm not sure, Jeremy, but they might have written a book something close to about Caroline. Thank you. Just like me. Hey, the Valley Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship. We invite you to come early and to stay after the meeting to get better acquainted with our fellowship. If anyone is in need of sponsorship or is available to be a sponsor, please be sure to connect with me after the meeting, and we'll get you connected to the other half of that equation. Are there any AA announcements?
Yes. Thank you.